Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to the medium Tracy Bray. Tracy is certified by the Wimbridge Research Centre as a research medium, has appeared on TV and appears in books by noted researchers Dr. Julie Beischel and Dr. Gary Schwartz. Well, Tracy, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. It's very kind of you to give us your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. I'm very glad to be here.
You're a medium. Can you tell me, have you had a talent as a medium through your whole life?
Well, I believe that I was born with it. The first person, dead person that I saw, I was roughly 5 or 6 years old. And it was the first time a known person appeared to me. So it wasn't until my late 20s, however, that I realized that I was actually a medium.
And when you were small, did you tell your parents that you were seeing things?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. My mother took a phone call around lunchtime and she started to cry. And she had learned that my paternal grandfather had passed away unexpectedly at work. And she, my next younger sister and I asked her what was wrong. And she told us grandpa died. And we asked, what did that mean? And she said, well, he's gone to live with God in heaven. We were raised Methodist. So God was this big Caucasian guy with a white beard who was really rather scary and intimidating. And I turned around, we were standing in our kitchen, and I turned around and looked into the dining room, and there was my grandfather standing there. Now, that was a little unusual because I came from, that side of the family was really large. I had 28 first cousins, and so my grandfather, I only recall him at our home one time when he was living, and so I must have thought that somewhat unusual. Because we would always be at his cabin on the Mississippi River or at his home, which was really large. And I looked at my mom and she was continuing to talk about what death meant. And I turned around and looked at him again and he winked and just disappeared. And so I said to my mom, well, how come if he's in heaven with God, he's standing in the dining room? And she whacked me lightly on the head and said, don't speak about that when your dad gets home, because your dad, you know what will happen. Well, I came from a violent household and I knew darn well what would happen. So I never talked about seeing dead people again.
And so that was a taboo subject in your house?
Definitely.
And when you saw him, was he completely solid? Does he look like just a normal person that was alive?
He manifests in full form. There was something that I knew was different it's hard to describe, but it was full form enough. And he was standing prone with his hands straight to his side and his legs together, shoulders up. And I know it must have struck me as very different, but it was a full form manifestation.
And did he appear to be the same age as the last time you saw him, or did he look a little younger and healthier?
Well, keep in mind, I'm 61 and I was 5 or so then, but as I recall, yeah, he looked the same.
Did you eventually, you must have gone into some kind of mediumship development, is that right?
Actually, I call myself a medium by the seat of my pants. And I began to occasionally at some spiritualist churches in my hometown of Clinton, Iowa in the U.S., would go to their summer camps and get readings. And I went with some coworkers. After doing that for a couple of years, I noticed at work, people would say to me, how did you know? I supervised a lot of people and they'd say, how did you know how to do that? When everybody else was running right, you were going left. Why do you know these things? You must be psychic. And I would laugh, not that I thought being psychic was funny. I was really rather fascinated, but I had no idea that I was psychic or a medium. So my secretary at the time was into going to the spiritualist camp as well. And I said to her, do you think I'm psychic? And she said, you know, I really do. So I read for her, and that's how it started. A couple of years into the psychic readings, I began to do medium readings.
And so what did you do before you were a medium?
I have a bachelor's degree in something called family services, which kind of combines social work and home economics. And at the time that this all happened, I was a director of transportation for a city, and I supervised buses, parking, crossing guards, and an airport. And I went on to get a master's in law enforcement, and that's when also the gift was really coming into its own. So I have done a number of things. The last two things I did in the law enforcement arena were as a curriculum writer and trainer for the states of Iowa and the state of Illinois, learning domestic homicide and methamphetamine production and use.
And have you ever been invited to use your abilities with a criminal investigation?
I have. I would say the invitations to do so from law enforcement came much less often, which is common in the U.S., than invitations from families to do so. I am not one that there have been very isolated occasions where I have reached out independently to law enforcement. But yes, I have done a number of those.
Did you have any successes?
I did. I don't talk about the ones that I worked with law enforcement, but I do a bit with ones I worked with families. And there are a couple that I think are really noteworthy. One was a long-term client called me. Would you like to hear this?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. A long-term client called me, and I'm located in the middle geographically of the United States, in Kansas City, Missouri. There's a Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri, and their neighbors. But I live in the Midwest, and I had a client call me whose brother they were sure had probably committed suicide out on the desert in the western U.S. She asked if I could help find him. They'd found his truck, but they just could not find his body. And I told her, if you've ever been on a desert, the wind sweeping of the sands can create ledges. And I said that he was probably buried on top of a ledge or under a ledge that, or not buried, that he had crawled up under a ledge and died. And to make a long story short, I said that also they could be standing on top of the ledge and not even know it. So they would constantly have to, when on ledges, go down and look back up under. And she said to me, can you give me any numbers that might relate to this? Now, I had no idea why she was asking that. It didn't make any sense. So I gave her a series of numbers. 2 years later, this woman called me back. The woman called me back, and she said that had I heard that they had found her brother. Now, these were not well-known people. They were, you know, like over 1,000 miles away from me. And I said, no, I thought that odd. And she said, well, it was all over the national news. Now, I found it especially odd in that nobody had called me. And I told her no. And she said that the numbers that I had given her were the coordinates. I can't think of the first word, something coordinates, that they were able to plug in the numbers and found him. And I said to her, why did I never hear about this? She said, well, my husband would have killed me had he known I got a reading. So I told them that I dreamed the numbers. I'm trying to think, there was another case at the forefront of my mind. This one is a little bit quicker to tell. It was a case I worked on for over 6 months of a missing, fairly young mom and child in either Arkansas or Oklahoma in the U.S. They weren't sure which. I was able to narrow that down to their bodies in a state forest, a heavily forested area, within 200 yards. That was another one that was very nice. And that was working with the family as well. Law enforcement and neither were interested in working with mediums.
So have you ever been sitting with someone and a spirit has come through who is not connected with the sitter, but still insists on communicating something?
Not very often. And that's, I think, probably more about me as a professional reader, in that if I'm aware of that, unless it somehow pertains to the reading itself or the person itself in some maybe even obscure way, I tend to not focus on that because I'm very consumer oriented. And a lot of my clients, I don't know that they're evolved enough that they would appreciate their time being spent on something that didn't relate to them. There have been people that have come through that aren't have never been a known person to the client, the sitter, and have spoken to the sitter about something going on in their lives. And I'll certainly focus on that. Those are quite interesting when that happens.
And do you have a spirit guide that works with you?
I do. I believe I have a plethora of them that come through. There is a guide who was a living person. It's kind of odd. It was a guy I was dating's father who, the week I met the guy, the guy I was dating, his dad died. So I never met his dad living, but his dad was a retired fire department captain. And when there are fire-related issues in a reading, he's who brings them through. There's another more esoteric guide that has to do with writing. So if a client, we're talking about them maybe starting to write a blog, for example, it may be that that information is coming through from that particular spirit guide.
Do you feel that the spirit guides are in some way organizing things on the other side? It's kind of like they're queuing up spirits for the sitting?
Oh, I think you put it exactly what happens. Yes, I do.
So it's almost like this on the other side, there's some kind of, I don't know, they email the spirits, so to say, and say, okay, we need you here at this time to communicate.
Yes. And when I set appointments, actually I use automatic scheduling, but when an appointment pops up on my schedule, I think already spirit knows when that person has made the appointment, probably has nudged them to make the appointment. But when I see that, that's when I begin my very informal process of saying to spirit, may information come through, and goodness for you, spirit, and goodness for my client, and goodness for me, because I'm not going to tolerate anything else. And I've been very fortunate that that's how it's worked.
And do you feel with some of the clients then that it's the spirits on the other side that are kind of subconsciously pushing the sitter to come and see you?
I believe that happens, yes. And I think sometimes it's very conscious. For example, I have I post on Facebook nearly daily under Tracy Bray Medium, and often somebody will read a post and believe that that was the nudge for them to come and to have made an appointment. And sometimes I do channeled messages on Facebook, and they're short, but it's been through many of those that people are nudged to come and have a reading. Now, it's very rare on Facebook that I hawk readings, that I solicit readings. Very rare. In fact, I did that the other day and remarked in the post how rare it is. So people pick up on things that are there and believe that they are messages for them. When my intention in writing them is not necessarily, never to get them to connect for a reading. It's just what spirit has to say to them.
Do you do readings over Skype and telephone?
Telephone, yes. Skype, I've not yet. I'm entertaining doing them over Skype or Zoom later this year or into next year, 2019. Telephone embodies the majority of my readings. I do them in person as well. And I travel in the United States. I have pockets of clients in different areas, in Florida, in Maryland, in Iowa, to name a few places. That I travel to a few times a year to read.
I suppose that as long as you're in contact with the sitter, it doesn't matter how far apart you guys are. It's not about distance. It's if you're dealing with something that's in another dimension.
Right. We call in the U.S. Myself, and how I know this is I'm a certified research medium with the Windbridge Research Center in Tucson, Arizona. And we know that I'm a mental medium. That means I get things. I tell people the difference of phone and in person. I don't need to be with someone. That would be a physical medium, needing to be in physical proximity. But the reason I can do this is if you could see me, I'm reaching my hands kind of up and I'm saying, I read for you and put my hands out towards you. So I read for you. I don't read you. So I don't need to look at a person. For the mental mediums with Windbridge, I think it's probably fair to say that we believe that you may get a better or more pure reading by phone than you would in person. Because in person, any medium that would deny that looking at a person doesn't give them cues, clues, or information is fibbing. I mean, you can't help but observe. That's what we do as human beings. But the phone takes that part away.
And you were certified by the Windbridge Institute. Could you tell us about that process?
Yes, it's a several month process. And I'm very, very proud of that. And I think I've been with them, gosh, I don't know, a number of years. And prior to Windbridge, there was a program called Veritas. Veritas means truth in Latin. That was out of the University of Arizona and led by Dr. Gary Schwartz. And I was a Veritas medium. And when Veritas and Windbridge began, I became a Windbridge medium. And the process, it's an 8-step screening process and training procedure. There's a written questionnaire that goes out. There are personality and psychological tests, a phone interview with one of the existing certified research mediums, and then a phone interview with a Windbridge investigator. That's followed by two blinded phone readings. And those blinds, might I add, are quintuple blinded readings. Then there's a bit of medium research training. I have a master's in law enforcement, I mentioned, and it focuses on research. So that helped me a bit in understanding research and the process, ethics, et cetera. The seventh step is human research subjects training, talking about, that's a lot of ethics, about working with sitters. And then we had a step about grief training.
Yeah, that's essential, isn't it? Because I suppose there are people that might want to have a sitting with you who've lost someone very recently. Would you say that it's a good idea to see a medium when you're in that sort of condition?
I would first say it's certainly a prerogative of the person. I think in England, you have much more of an acceptance of mediumship and an understanding of it, where you've ever heard in the US of the Bible Belt, it's a strip of states that are very conservative in religion. and I happened to live in it. So for me to do any advertising that really solicits it, I don't, but I think it can be extremely helpful with grief. In fact, I believe that is one of the things Winbridge is working on now. I couldn't tell you specifics. You could probably go on the website and read it, but about how it can be a mediumship reading can be a real tool to use in recovery from trauma of death, for example.
And do you have any examples where you have had a sitter in that condition that where you've really helped them?
Oh, heavens, I have loads of them. I can think of one. I've had these clients for over 20 years at this point. And it was at the time when I would travel to people. I don't do it any longer, but I drove out to Topeka, Kansas, which is about an hour west of where I live. And this was a mom who was probably early 50s at the time and two young adult children. And the father had passed away, probably 5 or 6 months prior up to the reading. And in the reading, I was hearing he was coming through. We had already identified that. And I heard the song sung by Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon. Fly me to the moon and let me sing among the stars. I'm hearing that. And I thought, sometimes I think, oh, for heaven's sakes, why is that coming through? But I know well enough to say, are you familiar with the song Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra? All three, the son, the daughter, and the mom started to cry. And the daughter had been married in a nice big wedding about a month prior to the reading. And the song that she danced to with her first dance with her then new husband was Fly Me to the Moon. And Fly Me to the Moon was chosen because it was her father's favorite song. And he couldn't be there for her first dance. So extremely healing. This stuff happens not in every reading, but I feel comfortable in saying all the time.
Have you ever had a sitter and you've received information that you feel is probably better not to pass on to them?
I have, but I think one of the benefits I have in having the college experience I have, I mentioned the family services. Well, there were in both that and my master's degree, there were a lot of counseling courses. Now, I am not a registered therapist, but I know how to talk to people, and that is very, very helpful. Several years ago, I was down in Kentucky and reading at a fair. I don't do fairs any longer, but a woman who I'd never met before was standing up to leave from her reading. And I'll tell you what I said to her, which is actually quite different from what I was seeing. But I think I delivered the message effectively. And it was this. I said, do you work outside of your home? She said, yes. I said, do you drive to work on a blacktop? And she said, yes. And I said, when you're on the blacktop, now this I had to stress, when you're going to work in the morning, do you pass a gravel quarry where they mine rock? And she said, yes. And I said, please, in the next 6 months or so, be very, very careful. And this reading was in the springtime. Be very, very careful. I'm concerned that there's a large truck loaded with rock barreling out of that quarry, and it's not going to stop before it enters the highway. She said, oh, thank you very much. I will be sure to do that. And I suspect she was sure to do that. I never heard from her again, but what I was seeing was quite different. I saw a violent crash that mangled the vehicle and killed the occupants. Now, I don't believe my job in readings is to look for things and prevent them, but this is something that came up that I felt responsible to deliver in a responsible manner.
Where do you think that came from?
Don't know. There's a lot that I don't know. And I didn't have the feeling during the reading that it was coming from a specific person. I would say instead I had slipped into some kind of perhaps channeling mode, or picking up on something that spirit was saying versus a directly discarnate, a directly dead person.
And have you ever had a spirit come through that was deceased hundreds of years ago?
I have. I do genealogy readings for people, not very often, but upon a request. And I have had that happen. I also do, so far just in writing, I offer specials off of my website, which is my name, Tracy with an I, tracybray.com. I offer specials every once in a while about past life readings. Those I write up. And of course, some of those have gone back to, I want to say the earliest was probably about 1300 BC.
Oh, that's very interesting. Like, one of the things that I think about is because I have a belief in reincarnation. And if somebody is reborn, then their soul is connected to the new body. But mediums are sometimes able to communicate with the previous incarnation. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's what I would say I am doing when I do the past life work. I've had some training in Akashic Records, but to be quite frank, I realized that when I took the Akashic Records training, which was really well done out in Denver, I realized I'd already been doing it anyway. Akasha, of course, can go back centuries through time. And if you look at time in a linear fashion, forward as well.
And do you ever get any information, future lives?
I do. My belief is that in reincarnation as well, and I believe that when the soul passes, when the body dies, the soul passes, I believe the soul fragments, it breaks into pieces. And I think one piece is the realm that I read from as a medium. But I think other pieces are reincarnated. And some of those pieces might reincarnate immediately, where they might hang around for centuries. So I think that's why you can get some back and forth in timing of past lives. I also think with past lives, putting reincarnation aside, we have DNA, and I believe in tissue memory. Our bodies remember. We remember trauma, we remember joy, etc. And so I think we can get past life stuff in that realm as well.
Talking of body memories, I have read about people who've had heart transplant.
Correct.
And they would have had no interest in classical music. And after they've received the heart, suddenly they have a great love of classical music. And then they find that the donor was a violinist. And it seems that something was transferred through the heart transplant.
Yes. I find that research fascinating. I've read some of that as well. To me, one of the funny things was I read one of a man who did not drink alcohol. Yet after his heart transplant, he craved beer. And come to find out, the person that he got the heart from was a beer aficionado. So he started to drink beer.
Have you ever been invited to investigate haunted houses?
I have. I don't do too much of that. I don't know that it's my forte. So I haven't concentrated time with that. I think one of the neat ones I did was out in a bed and breakfast on the East Coast. And the building was what we call here a colonial style building built in, I believe, the late 1700s, which for the United States, that's pretty old. For y'all there, it's not. But I walked into I asked the owners to tell me nothing about the building. And when I walked through a doorway into one of the suites, I have never had this happen before or after. It was so much fun. I'm fairly short. And it was as if there was a male behind me who was not there, who put his hands gently on my shoulders. And if I would have had to, how would I describe this? It's as if he pushed me down and into the room, pushed my shoulders down and into the room, just gave me a little shove. And I laughed. It was so funny. And evidently that was the suite in the this very large B&B. I think it had over 30 units in it. That is the one where they were having, quote, problems with a particular ghost. I found the ghost rather entertaining. Now, if I was somebody that was prone to being frightened by that, I'm sure that would have done the trick.
And do you ever get scared?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I believe that the work I do is very God, spirit, creator, whatever word one wants to use. I believe it's God-based. And therefore, it has always felt safe to me. Now, I would say I've never been scared of anything coming through as far as a spirit in a reading goes. I have been afraid of a handful of clients I've had over the last 30 years.
And you said God then earlier. So what is your definition of God? Is it the Christian God view?
It's probably simplified from that. And to me, God equates with some sort of spiritual goodness that oversees and leads us and guides us and creates our eternity. So as compared to that Caucasian guy I discussed that when I was five and saw my paternal grandfather who had died, it's a very different vision. I don't picture a person, a human incarnation, just an energy.
But when reincarnation, people talk about the purpose of having multiple lives is to grow and eventually return to the source. So would you think that God and source are the same thing?
Well, I think God and source are the same thing. I don't know that that's the reason we reincarnate. I'm not quite so sure about why that happens, what the purpose of it is. You know, I know there is the thought that we try to get it right. We try to get it better all the time. But my belief is that all of these lifetimes are going on at the same time.
Because in the other realm, whatever it is, the other dimension where the spirit world is there isn't time. It's just infinite.
Right. One time, this was a personal experience I had that might help explain my belief of it. I don't remember what the issue was that I had a deja vu experience. Seeing something that had happened prior or in advance. I don't remember what it was. But in that, I had this flash of, I'm older, and when I was in grade school, we watched films that were actual films, I think 9mm, on a round projector wheel. And if you've ever seen those, they would, as each frame of the film is drawn through the film projector, it clipped. It went. Now, if the film was ripped or torn, it would do this. It would skip while the projector tried to grab that next frame. Well, in this vision I had, I saw an endless row of projectors focusing on different screens. And it was like, if you've ever been in a public restroom, I've seen them in large golf clubs, country clubs, where you can see your reflection multiple times down the row of mirrors. And that's what those projectors look like. And I thought, oh my God, my vision in that deja vu moment skipped over to another projector of that lifetime. And as quickly as I was there, I was back. But I thought, isn't that interesting?
When people go to see a medium, would you recommend that they keep as much information back as possible. So, because some people will see a medium and say, oh, they can check everything on Facebook. So they'll just give you their first name.
Right. And I suppose that's possible. And I just giggle at that because it's so, I understand where people are coming from, but it's just so offensive to a medium that works with ethics. But my style is quite like the American medium, John Edward. And what I will do is see what will identify who's coming through. And my style is, as I see things, I will say, I'll describe the person in some way. It might be also that I say something like they say it, how they pronounce it. We'll get to a point where we identify the person. And then I'll look at messages that the spirit has to give to the client. And then I say to the client, do you have any questions for this person? So my readings are very interactive. As far as doing a cold I tell people at the beginning, let me think how I say this. I prefer to work with no information up front. I don't want to know who they want to hear from. And I tell them, I have no idea who's going to come through. It may be somebody you want to hear from and it may not. And I tell them not to, worry. If we bring a few people through and there are other people they want to hear from, I'm happy, after I've done a few people to say, who would you like to hear from and go in that direction. But I think it's much more meaningful to the client to start with nothing.
And also there's the idea that you've got enough time that you can start doing a load of research and Facebook and the internet, trying to find out information about all of your sitters. You'd need a whole team of assistants for that, wouldn't you?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, yes. One thing about most of the mediums I've encountered, I don't have staff and I'm self-employed. I don't have a spouse or partner in my home. And my life is excruciatingly busy managing my life and a business. And readings, as far as my mediumship business, my sole source of work go, are actually only probably about 10 to 15% of the time that I spend on the work. I mean, I'm writing doing a website. I'm putting together events. I'm writing a newsletter. The scheduling, et cetera. It's a time consuming business. And I wouldn't invite anybody into my home, but I'd invite somebody official in to look at the history on my phone and my computer, my desktop and my laptop. I think, any ethical medium would do that. Certainly, she went to the library. I'd have to look up where the library is in my metropolitan area because I'm not sure where the closest one is. I'm spending more time, I think, talking to you about that than I do with clients, because I'll tell a client that if you are that concerned, it takes a bit of trust on your part to make the reading go well. When I have learned over doing this for 30 years that when people come in skeptical and almost bitter with their skepticism, the reading isn't going to work. I won't even, if I'm aware of that, I will not do a reading. If I'm aware of it when I've started a reading, if I don't know it when I've started the reading and become aware of it, I will stop the reading. My job is not to prove anything. My job is simply to be a medium in the middle of the client and the spirit and share information.
And so do you feel that the sitter's frame of mind and point of view and how they feel can have a real effect on how well the sitting goes?
Absolutely. And one of the things I did a long, long time ago was decided who is my ideal client and what kind of readings do I not want to do? For example, ghost information. If you looked on my scheduling page, if you were scheduling, I mentioned that I no longer work crime. I don't work any ghost-related energy at all. So those two things I've just nixed out of the client that I'm looking for. And on my website also, I have a section on how to find a medium and how to know if a reading with me is right for you. And I put some work into that. And by doing that, I typically only get clients who are ready for the reading and eager for it and excited about it, sometimes very nervous about it.
Do you feel you're continually surprised by things that come through, or have you heard it all now?
Oh, heavens no, I've not heard it all. And I sometimes am just stunned. It's almost like an out-of-body experience for me there, where there's that woman, Tracy, doing the reading, and I'm up here watching like, you've got to be kidding me. How exciting it is to me with the stuff they come up with that is in direct meaning to the client, that just would have no meaning to me whatsoever. Therefore, as a medium, I've learned to get out of the way of myself. And as a human, I might be in my head processing, why are they saying that? But to just get out of the way of myself and put it out there and say it.
Could you give us a couple of examples of things that have really surprised you?
One came up, it's not that big of a deal, but came up a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, if I said to you, the animal chicken, you'd picture a chicken, probably would not be an elaborate chicken, just a hen. I pictured these exotic chickens with poofy tufts on their heads and beautiful colors, and some were small, some were very large. And I said to the client, and there was an elderly woman coming through, and I said, I don't know why I'm seeing elaborate chickens, just all different types. And she laughed and she said, well, this grandmother raised and bred exotic chickens. So, you know, something like that. In a long-term reading that really surprised me, I did this probably in the mid-1990s. And I was in the middle of Missouri, Columbia, Missouri, doing this. And I just ran into this client a couple of days ago, which is interesting. But anyway, she was going to move when she retired to the state of Alaska, which is thousands of miles away. And most people from here that move to Alaska drive up. And she told me she was going to fly. And I said to her, please don't. It's rarely rare that I'll tell somebody, don't do it. But I was just seeing, getting this feeling from spirit, don't do it, don't do it. And I told her that something, I said, I'm not quite understanding what they're saying, but something is going to be, I said, your plane's not going to crash, but it's not going to take off. And it's some problem. They keep saying two tires, but I'm not seeing plane tires. So I'm not sure. But when you schedule, if you schedule the flight, I said, be prepared to not fly. Well, only a couple of years ago, she contacted me and told me that she did, in fact, retire, and she did, in fact, move to Alaska, and she did, in fact, try to fly. And on September 11th, 2001, she was sitting on the tarmac in St. Louis, Missouri, excuse me, waiting to take off. And it was in the morning. And that, of course, was the infamous day of the Twin Towers, two towers, not two tires, falling. So, you know, those kinds of things stun me. And there are, you know, much more, just tons and tons of small examples, but that was a biggie.
Have you ever had any encounters with poltergeists?
I have. I'm a trained feng shui practitioner. I've worked with some really great teachers in the U.S., Karen Kingston, who's in England. And I used to space clear homes. And yeah, I had run into those many, many years ago when I was doing that.
There's some theory that it's some kind of energy that comes from of somebody that's alive, but did you feel that it was a discarnate spirit?
I thought that it was a combo there. All of the poltergeists I've seen have involved adolescent females in the house, that often there is sexual abuse when I've seen it going on with this kid. Maybe not that happened in the house, but happened to the kid. And somehow that energy, I don't know if it was attracted to the child or the child found it attractive or what the mechanism there was. But those are some correlations I've seen with it. And just in a handful that I've worked. So I don't mean to profess that that's the case in all.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the case in all of them, would it?
I wouldn't think so. And, you know, I think workers are guided to what they do best. And keep in mind, one of my early jobs was 7 years as a director of a domestic violence sexual assault center in a very large Iowa area in Iowa. So sometimes I think spirit will use the reader's orientation to life and the reader's experience to help others.
Yeah, so they would have chosen you specifically because of your knowledge and experience.
Right. And also keep in mind, when that happened, I was living in the Kansas City area, which is a very large population area. So, you know, there were just a number of those that came before me.
What advice do you have for somebody who will be sitting with a medium? Well, how can they prepare themselves?
Well, one is, I think prior to the reading, I think most people that schedule have an agenda. They have people that they want to hear from. Invite, speak to them, tell them that you'd like to connect with them. Try to develop a dialogue. Some people already have a regular dialogue going on, which is really neat. I would tell them to think about questions, since that's one of my style, you know, part of my style. Have questions ready for that person or those people that you want to ask, because sometimes I think people have just kind of such anxiety before a reading that they forget. They just go blank. Let me see. I tell them I tape readings for people. I still use the old-fashioned cassette tape, but I tell them, you know, if you want to tape on your own, be ready. I encourage them, when they're calling or coming, arrive just on time, not early. I think, you know, spirit, they've scheduled and spirit knows when they've scheduled. So I think that's important, because I think it all has to work together, the timing of it. And another thing is, I encourage them to remain open and expect to validate information after the reading. The 911 thing, for example, the reading I just gave, that didn't happen until years after that reading had happened. So I've heard from people that I think of one reading, for example, where a woman came in and in a public reading, a public group, and at the very end, it came up that spirit encouraged her to get a mammogram. I heard from one of her relatives that a week later, she did, in fact, because of the reading, scheduled a mammogram and was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she did very well, and it was early. But so be open to taking their advice and tailoring that as you will. So those are some things I would say that are helpful.
Thank you very much for coming on and being onto the podcast. Would you give us your website address again, please?
Certainly. It's my name, Tracy, T-R-A-C-I, Bray, B as in boy, R-A-Y.com, TracyBray.com. And I post on Facebook nearly daily at Tracy Bray Medium.
And people can schedule sittings with you themselves, can they, through the website?
Through the website, yeah. There's a tab that says scheduling, and they can go right on their schedule, and for a phone reading, pay it in full.
Well, once again, thank you for coming on. It's been a great conversation.
time, and thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
And that was an interview with the medium Tracy Bray. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended episodes. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.